Oh, put this down here. That'll work better. Oh, let's see. So, number one, Colin Meanderer. We are in this vehicle dubbed Sandy. When I first bought it, it had about, it had nearly 80,000 miles on it now. Then, when did I get it? I'm thinking it was, gas prices have really sprung up. $3.19 again. $3.39 over here. Oh boy. That's not particularly good. Everybody out today is either a police officer or something like that. I wonder what caused this great jump. We had been below three for $3 a gallon for a long time. Can I say that this isn't going to help Joe Biden and his magnificent economy? I don't want there to be a bad economy. You know, when you go, well, I don't want Biden to look bad. And you go, you know what? I think he does fine on his own. I don't think anybody needs to help him. Anyway, this car, Sandy's about to turn over 200,000 miles. We're about 70 miles off of it. My actual journey today is about 120 miles. So during this journey this morning, getting to work will put us over the top. Oh, my gosh. Now, here out at the truck stops outside Tucumcari, the gas price is still $2.79. I wonder if that's just kind of an aberration or if the guys in town know something. You know, the next batch of gas is going to cost that much more. It's hard to say. I was just reading this morning that a big spending package is coming to New Mexico. Apparently, it's the same kind of mindset that says, you know, if there's a problem, throw money at it. And remember when they were doing that with schools and it really didn't help much? So apparently a lot of New Mexico, people who work for the state of New Mexico and school teachers are going to get a nice pay raise. Good for them. This time around, it has nothing to do with me. I'm not working for any of those outfits. I'm working for the U.S. federal government, kind of through contractor. And so we're not going to get too interested or excited. I mean, I'm happy for those who are going to get pay increases. I don't know how people feel if it's going to really make their lives appreciably better. Tucker Carlson, who is I don't know what exactly he is. News commentator, interviewer. It's hard to kind of pin him down. He's not really much of a news reader. Although I think that's how he got into this field in the first place, perhaps. I'm not sure. I think I heard it one day, but it just wasn't that, that's the road to success. Journalism doesn't pay like it used to, I suppose. I don't think writing pays like it used to. You know, people used to say, he writes a book and now he jet sets around the world. He goes here and there. And you go, well, I guess there's speaking gigs to do. You get an invitation and somebody offers to pay your way to come and speak, put you up for the night, whatever. I don't know how much that really works anymore. I'm just reminded now that I'm going down the road here, and the roads are getting quite bad here on Interstate 40 in New Mexico. And they say they're going to be working on this soon. In the spring, a lot of work is going to happen on the interstate highway around Tucumcari. And so, mostly I drive this road in the wee hours of the morning, although I do come back during prime construction time. So my homecomings will be a little less, aggravated. Or no, more aggravated. I mean, the roads will still be blocked, but it's not like there's tons of traffic at 4. Right now it's about 3:30 in the morning in New Mexico. So I'm going off to work. Oh. So let's see, how many things have I jumped to already? Let's not talk about that. Anyway, Tucker Carlson, he interviewed Vladimir Putin, the leader of Russia, and I found that to be a very interesting interview. Tucker Carlson doesn't appear to be sycophantic to the powers that be. He doesn't seem to be in their pocket. Although, you know, he's not stupid. He's not going to come out and just say atrocious things. I was listening to a not much of one. There was an interview. He got asked to come to a gathering in, I think it was in Dubai, just after that interview. And that was pretty much what he got worked over. And the thing that I constantly got from the interviewer was, he's just stunned that with what Tucker Carlson was saying, the kinds of, you know, even consorting with the horrible, torturous enemy of America, the interviewer was absolutely flummoxed by the fact that Tucker wasn't going to be leaving the United States. And he said, why would I want to leave the United States? I love the United States. He says, is the government corrupt? Yes. Do bad things happen? Yes. And he said, I'm not leaving. He says, we've still got freedom of speech. He says, now you wouldn't know that from our media, who seem to have nuzzled up very well with the government, which is sad because that was actually one of the tenets of freedom of speech, freedom of the press, is that it would be a good foil to government. And now that they have almost kind of merged together, except for a few, mostly ones that aren't very well listened to, as far as I'm aware of, Tucker didn't pull any particular punches. He said, I'm not a fan. He says, I don't want to live in a world run by Putin. You know, I'm not wanting to go to Russia. Anyway, it was very interesting. The kind of candor, I think, Now, did Vladimir Putin really reveal anything shocking? And you go, no, you know, he was pretty much talking about Wilson style, you know, they said that, well, he was talking about history for so long, and I think the whole idea of talking about the history was that Ukraine and Russia were very much joined at the hip, and Ukraine was usually a part of Russia. Now you have to understand, and this was something that wasn't talked much about, but was alluded to by Vladimir Putin. Was that Russia, by and large, up until recently, has mostly been a country of cities, of metropolitan areas, and you can look at the extent of Russia on a map and go, "Wow, that's huge," and you go, "Yeah, but it's not really strongly unified." When you look at pictures of Russians, and they all look very Nordic / European, know that you're looking at the Russia that are the cities, the European cities in the west of Russia, that a lot of that territory that takes in Russia are old Mongols, maybe even Chinese. As you look at eastern eastern Russia, the Far East, as they call it, Serbia, you see much more Serbians. And Serbians don't look much like the European Russian at all. Although, you know, Russia did what they always do. And I'm not saying it's anything improper or wrong. They tend to spread out. You know, if you're going to claim a place as your own, you want to encourage people to move somewhere where you're trying to establish your, I don't know if it's dominance or whatever, establish yourself. And so a lot of people got sent to far-flung places to colonize it, basically. And this is pretty normal during Russian history, not just the Soviet era. That was what was happening. He made it look like, and I don't think it's inaccurate, that Ukraine itself was never really a place until the Soviets conquered it, and it established Ukraine. You know, it was always somewhat split up amongst several countries, Russia being one of them. And when they talk about this war, and you're going, well, how come you guys haven't just taken over? You could have. And they said, you know, and he seemed kind of cagey, Putin did. about what would ultimately happen. It seemed like they're only interested in, well, it seems like they're interested in a couple of things. Number one, protecting the, I don't know if you call it autonomy, of the Donbass region and those places that they've already pretty much conquered that have a lot of ethnic Russians. And so as they're trying to protect their people as well as their country's integrity, it seems like a decent thing to do. The fact that they haven't just, I mean, they bombed Kiev to the point to where they could have easily taken it over. You know, most of the stuff going on there was to reduce Ukraine's capacity to fight back. Now, the West has been throwing tons of stuff at Ukraine. A lot was given about the expansion of NATO, which a deal had been struck quite a while ago that NATO would not try to expand, which is hilarious because Russia wanted to become a part of NATO at some point in the past, during Putin's time. And he made it sound like, well, they said they are against us becoming a part of this treaty organization, which is really sad. So they said, so we struck out on our own, did the best we could on our own. Now, the encroachment of NATO is really quite, I understand Russia's problem with it. There's a lot of forces, not forces, but factions in the United States who, I don't know, want to take over Russia. Tucker said some interesting things. He says during his visit, he was amazed by how peaceful and clean and orderly Russia was, Moscow was. He went to the Kremlin to have this interview. He was very upset, Tucker was, over the fact that it seemed like the U.S. government was really against him going. I think it goes to my whole thing that says that it's very important to the propaganda that Americans don't know much about Russia. We already have a really bad myopic tendency in the first place, that we really don't know anything outside of our own country very well at all. In fact, we don't know much inside of it either. And it seems like our leaders kind of want to keep it that way. I used to watch a couple of Russian people that were putting up videos on YouTube. Mostly about how much things cost over there, their economy, their living, stuff like that. The place they were living was small. It kind of felt like, I don't think it was a tenement so far, but and their food prices were very low. Their fuel prices seemed to be not extravagant at all. These guys had a car, and they had a little baby. It was a couple and their little baby. And they would go through the grocery store, and they would basically, there was certain kind of grocery stores. There was one that kind of looked, he called it working class, and it reminded me of the old warehouse stores that we used to have in the United States. Those have since kind of, at least I haven't seen them since, they've kind of gone away. where they just get this big box of, like, you know, this big case of cereal with lots of things in it. And all they would basically do is kind of cut open the case, and you would come and get it out of the case, and you would bag your own groceries. The only person there was really the checker to check out your food, you know. And apparently those are still a thing in Russia, which is great. I liked them here while we had them. And then you go to a regular grocery store and you say, yeah, there's stuff that costs more here. Look like any Western grocery store. Now in the United States, everything is bigger and more expansive. In Russia, I think that's the same way too. I think it just comes from having a lot of elbow room because of things don't have to be so crowded up. Of course, I don't think he was, he wasn't living in Moscow or something that's like that. I don't think he was living in Serbia either. Serbia reminds me, except for the fact that it's just frigidly cold all the time. Serbia reminded me of where I come from, the frontier of the United States. Anyway. So, but, you know, I haven't watched that in a while. I don't know if YouTube has started blocking such things. I was mostly watching that before the war. Anyway, so, and you would listen to these people, you'd look at them, and you'd go, you know what? Are they antagonistic against anybody? And you go, no. You go, how do you feel about America? And they go, it's okay. You know, and some of them were saying, yeah, we would love to go and visit America. I did hear a lot from people who wanted to move to America, wanted to immigrate. Although, you know, I'm pretty sure there's, you know, I don't know. There's, anyway, getting back to the, to the Tucker Carlson Putin interview, Vladimir Putin interview. Let me be more respectful of him. When you drop his first name and just call him Putin and you spit it out like some kind of nasty statement, it tends to dehumanize him. And the great part was, in this interview, he did a good job of humanizing himself. He said, this is my attitude. And he says, you know what? He knows about his history. I think he knows more about the history of Russia and of the places surrounding it and of, like, World War I, World War II than most educated Americans. And you go, education is a, educated is a euphemism. It doesn't, it's almost laughable. We don't teach people about history or anything else. And so it makes it really easy for them to not feel very good about America and about what they were doing. We're constantly told how bad people we are, you know. We were bad to the Indians. You go, well, yeah. I think putting him up on reservations. I don't know. See, I don't know if that was a bad thing or not. The interesting thing that I found was almost any time that an Indian tribe would be given land to conduct themselves as they wish, Oklahoma is an example of this. They would almost turn around and sell it for money. Now, I don't know if it was because of horrible poverty. But I'm kind of so-so about the whole thing. you know, everybody talking about, oh, we need to do reparations. And you go, well, for the Indians, I think we did. We usually made deals with them. Now, were the Americans good at keeping those deals? You go, yeah, not particularly. These days in the United States, to have a Native American background is quite the perk. Mostly, whatever education you want, you'll pretty much have for free or for very low cost. Money gets tossed at the various tribes a lot. That doesn't have to do with some kind of weird Anglo guilt, probably. And do the tribes take advantage of it? Of course they do. Are you kidding? Of course they do. Now, are these all good places? No. And you go, yeah, since, you know, you often see the pictures of the horrors of it. And I said, you know what? It looks a lot like parts of Tucumcari or parts of other places where I've lived. On the road between my place at Veguita and Socorro were old Spanish settlements. And they look like tribal lands, you know? Gonna run down, lots of broken down cars, living in old trailers. And if you're just living off of what the tribe gives you, can I be honest? They said the universal basic income, I think the ultimate result, now everybody says, oh, they're doing fine. People use it to improve their housing or to keep the housing that they have. We just crossed over to Texas. And, wow, we are 29 miles from going over 200K on Sandy, my Mitsubishi Mirage. 2015 Mitsubishi Mirage. Everybody talks about the fact that the universal basic income would basically, it says, oh, it's wonderful. Every time we've trialed it, it looks great. Well, you have to understand, only a small number of people are going to, when they know it's just a trial, it's a trial balloon, and it may not last very long, people aren't going to use it to live off of. They aren't going to, like, quit their job or something like that. It's not going to happen. They mostly use it to make improvements, to fix up their houses or their improve something there, or they put it into savings. And they're going, well, of course, no matter how hard it seems like society or forces try to dumb down people, people aren't going to, by nature, act too dumb unless there's something in it for them. And so, yeah, what are they going to do? They're going to do updates that aren't going to cost them money down the road. You know, you don't want to spend that extra money to create a new bill. You know, buy a new car on a loan, because that money may dry up and then all of a sudden your loan's over with. Although stupid people might do that, and I think a lot of the positive stuff about, you have to understand, our media is often kept by forces. Sometimes it's government, sometimes it's the powerful. You know, It's easy to get bought and paid for. These guys have to make money too. The journalists, quote journalists, which are hilarious. It's like, what on earth is that? You go, it's a person that'll write and promulgate an idea for money via whatever resources it has, print or audio or video or whatever. And you go, you know, it says if you don't, you just know it's going to happen. The universal basic income, there's several trials. Places, even in the United States, keep trialing doing this. And, its proponents say that they'll use it for good things. All the detractors will say that it will be used for drugs and stuff like that. And I think that as long as it's considered to be a temporary thing and it might go away, which is always what a trial is, it's something that will go away, people aren't going to use it for the thing that's intended. It isn't going to be used to really improve the poor because the poor will refuse to use it in a way that will get them into hock later. Now, some of them have to because a lot of poverty programs, especially in the United States, are tied to your assets. And if you stuff it away in just a savings account, you'll start losing benefits. And so they will find different ways to sink that money into things that won't affect their benefits. So if you give them an extra $1,000 a month, what are they going to spend it on? Things that won't beat up their poverty benefits. So they'll go out and eat more. And of course, in going out and eating more, they'll probably get, you know, nutrition will probably come up. That'll probably do good. They'll spend more on clothes and, you know, they'll buy a nicer TV because these things don't count against the poverty things. And that's why I think it's always funny. It says, I worked in the poverty sector. I was a WIC nutritionist for a little while. And also as a missionary, a lot of people who have the time during the day and will agree to talk to you are poor people, you know, because they're just present. And I would go into their houses, and they had much, much nicer things than I had. I always find it interesting when you go to people who are really drug-addled and have problems like that. They will have nice stuff, although it will be disgustingly badly maintained. It'll be broken, you know. And most people go, how come poor people are so fat? And you go, because most of the benefits are for food. And they buy as much food as they can, which means it's garbage food, with the benefit that they're given. And any extra money that they get, it's just kind of natural for them to sink it into food. You know, it's always amazing to see the piles of just rubbish, you know, and it smells bad because it's mostly spoiled food that they've gotten from wherever. Since they don't tend to dress, see, and that's the sad part, is that people say, well, wouldn't they update their clothing? And you go, it depends. It depends on the individual person and what they're after in life. Is there a big point in updating your clothing particularly? And you go, no. If you're not going anywhere what is the point of spending money on clothes? They're not very few people are stupid. So anyway, yeah. And I'm sorry, I was talking about the tribes, the American tribes, and the tribes folk. People don't know if we should call them Indians or call them what. So fine, call them tribes folk. And they do, you know, they tend to have kind of crappy housing. And you go, and when you go 10, it's like what they show you when they're trying to show you poverty on the reservation is that kind of thing. And you go, the bad part is a lot of tribes people are just constantly kind of waiting for the next thing. I'm not going to buy a new house under my own power. Eventually, the tribe will probably give me a new house or a new trailer. They don't give you nice stuff. You know, it's kind of cheap, kind of plasty. And they, plasty as in, like plastic is, you know, which gives every impression of being something, but is usually less durable, falls apart faster. Plastic melts. Can I be honest? Among other things. And when it breaks, it can't be repaired, so it becomes this whole refuse problem, which is what I was talking about. Poverty and tribesmen have some things in common, and it's interesting and sad to watch, and it really has to do with people doing strange things. That's what happens. Is the strange things that people do when you're trying to get money, especially when you're on the lowest end of it. And they don't want to be giving this stuff to everybody, which I think the only benefit to the universal basic income is that if you guarantee it, and I mean guaranteed across the board, it doesn't matter if you make $1 million, you'll get the universal basic income. If you don't work or something, you'll get the universal basic income. That's really the only way these things will kind of work. And how, when I started with Putin, with Vladimir Putin, he's a president, isn't he? We should probably call him President Putin, which would be more respectful of his office. Although it doesn't seem like it bothers him too much. Anyway, you know, that these kinds of people will be everywhere. If people are guaranteed something and there's no strings attached to it, they behave differently than if there are strings attached to it. And I think the great thing is to try to figure out whether a certain string is really a good idea. Unfortunately, once you've really kind of broken somebody, poverty programs do a really good job of breaking people. It's really hard to rebuild that. And I'm kind of bad that way. Living in Tucumcari doesn't really encourage much either. You know, there's not much, things are kind of on the expensive side. That's why I tell people, I said, you know, if you really want to improve the lives of people in Tucumcari, what should you do? And I go, hey, encourage them to move someplace else. And they go, are you for the poor? And you go, oh, yes, especially for the poor. The poor have the least, the poor suffer the most when the price of beef goes up by $1 a pound. They suffer the most. Or a person like me, who makes quite a bit of money, you know, if it goes up by $1, I'll go, inflation. Those guys, theirs goes up by $1, and their food stamp allotment doesn't go up in step with that. They really pay a horrible price. It's interesting. I go to Amarillo, and there is a whole, it's for the most part has been abandoned. It was a mobile home park. A lot of mobile homes there are still there. And not in bad shape. I was about ready to start squatting there. But I figured that that would be a little too much to ask for. Plus, I've got some resources. I still went cheap. I bought a really cheap piece of land outside of a town that, you know, doesn't have, there's nothing there. And I put my boat there and I sleep there because I see no, you know, that's all I do is sleep there. I exist when I'm away from home. I don't, I don't live a whole nother life out there. I don't want to get comfortable. How about that? And so, do I know how some poor people live? Yeah. When you go, I live out of my car. And you go, man, so do I. And they go, well, you got this, you got that. It's true, I do. You know, I actually make dietary choices. Isn't that amazing? Where I would say most poor people, I think they could make choices, but they don't tend to. They try to get as much as they can for as little as they can. Or, you know, poverty is as much a mindset as it is not having a lot of money. Or not having much money at all. It's a mindset too. And I'm sorry. Would people say a lot of poor people are lazy? And you go, it's not untrue. You can't make that blanket statement for all of them. But at some point I had to make a conscious choice that I wasn't going to be poor anymore. And I've also had to pull back on, I'll do whatever it takes to get more money. We're going to have a pension coming in soon. I'm kind of like, you know what? I just rather not work. I'd rather not have my time chewed up with getting money. I'd rather have my time spent doing other things. My glorious wife, Lisa, measures things differently than I do, a lot. And anyway, so these things are interesting. I'm trying to circle back to Vladimir Putin. I don't know if I can now that I've gone to talk a little bit about poverty and things like that. Not really, you know, I don't know. I think in big cities, there's more of a possibility for you to jump the shark. Now, is it filled with more concentrated problems? Yes. Are concentrated problems really bad? Yes. Crime in cities is a big problem. But once you get out of the cities, it disappears. Now, Tucumcari has a bit of a crime problem, but I think that mostly has to do with despair. I don't think a lot of things get stolen in Tucumcari. If people go, well, you don't live in the best part of town, you go, it's not bad. And you go, but you're not trying to clean it up and make it wonderful. I says, no, can I be honest? if you clean it up and make it wonderful and turn it pretty, it's going to encourage people to steal from you. So I tend to leave, the place kind of, it's trashy, but I'm not trying to turn my house into this show place, because I know in doing that, things will get stolen. I will get broken into far more often. And I'd rather have my family be safe than amazing. I'm two miles from turning over 200,000 miles. I keep remembering this. This is everything I record ends up being a hodgepodge. Let me get back to the UBI. If it was actually true that it was a UBI, and there really is not, and it has never been, it's always being treated as a poverty program. Always. And until they stop doing that, okay, here we go. 199999. And a mile here, it'll turn over to 200,000. It's always treated as a poverty program. As soon as it gets into place, people start saying, well, we can't have the rich people taking advantage of this. That's the first way that we fund this. There it is, 200,000 miles. Good job, Sandy. Which reminds me, we need to get Sandy a oil change soon here. You know, it might work good just to do it while I'm in Amarillo. Although I can't say the place that changes my oil is more expensive. I don't think it is. But just from the time. See, I can make those kinds of choices. I don't want to have my weekends chewed up with sitting around waiting for oil changes to get done. I'd rather spend the time someplace else. Anyway. Okay, well that fun's over with. The UBI, it's not going to behave the way you would like it to behave until it's like that, until it really is a UBI, and nobody has the fortitude to really do it. Now, I don't know, maybe some European country can pull it off. They seem to have kind of government services sort of mentality there. And everybody pays in and everybody gets the benefits. In the United States, one of the bigger problems is that our progressive tax system, where if you make more money, you get taxed higher, drills in a certain mindset that only poor people should rely on the government. Everybody else is on their own. It breeds the kind of divisions that we've always worked with before. In the past, it's always been the poor versus the rich. It's hilarious because a lot of rich people, okay, like let's say in politics, it's been put around, it's pretty firmly set in the national mindset that the Democrats care about the poor and the needy and the oppressed. And I think that's hilarious because most of people who have become wealthy off of government, you know, through politics or through getting a high position in government, in the bureaucracy, are probably now among the most well-paid people Now, entrepreneurs by nature will, upon doing a lot better, will make a lot more money than these guys. But they have to work a lot harder. A bureaucrat doesn't work very hard. It's just not part of the program. This is, and I've mostly been since I kind of walked away from government. I never felt very good about it, and now I'm doing something that requires something that I have, you know, the system administrator thing for very interesting pieces of equipment. You have to pay a lot of money for them. You have to get this kind of a specialized knowledge and experience. You've got to be reasonably smart. I'm mostly getting paid for being smart and having done a lot of interesting things for a long time. And it's paid off. It's paid off okay for me. I'm doing well. I gotta tell you, I'm doing well. Anyway, regardless, I've always treated my life as kind of an hourly sort of person, even if I'm salaried, because a work-life balance is a bureaucratic thing. Everybody who brings it up in any other kind of thing is laughable. From my standpoint, it is simply I think I am compensated with money to make up for the fact that I don't get much in the way of benefits. I don't take advantage of health plans, although I think I get an HSA. I think that's one of the options I have now, which isn't very common. I don't take advantage of it, which is bad because I could use that money to that extra money to for healthcare. Now, the normal HSA where they put a lot of money into an account and you would use that account to pay for your medical needs is really quite nice. I don't want to pay for the health insurance because I don't think it's very good health insurance. I don't mind what the kind of health share I have now is borderline catastrophic. And anyway. Where are we going around to? I don't have to do the thing. I'm 10 miles over. I'm 100,010. 200,010, sorry. So anyway, guys, it's been a hot spot. So let me stop this. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about the UBI and how I think it would actually kind of work and the fact that poverty programs kind of die for not taking care of this. So I'll talk about this now that I've got a little while longer on this trip. So I'm just going to let this go, and maybe the next one will be a formal Cohen Meanderer recording. So this will probably be personal, like so many of them are. So talk to you later. Bye.